It is easy for a lot of people to use the word definitive, and it's really overused. But I'm holding in my left hand, actually I almost need two hands, a definitive book by David Icke called The Trigger, The Lie That Changed the World, and Who Really Did It, and Why. David has authored many incredibly important books. This book on 9/11 is a monster, 800 pages. It's much more than just a book on 9/11, though. It's a book on where we have been, where we're going, how we're being forced to go there, and where we're going to end up. So with that, let me welcome back my friend of, 30 years, I guess. David, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. Yeah, it's just 30 years, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Long time. My goodness. How time flies. Seems like only yesterday. This took you, it was a Herculean effort to produce this book, The Trigger. What really pushed you to do so much? This is the definitive treatment of 9/11. Why'd you do it? So many books out there.
I described the book as the 9/11 commission that should have been, because all the information, if people would care to research it and seek it out, was all there for the 9/11 commission, which of course was the biggest cover up in known human history. And now, think of the competition. But
I think the competition, the Warren Commission. Come on, you got it.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I mean, it was unbelievable. Anything that did not support the official lie was excluded from the 9/11 commission, which of course was headed by a guy called Philip Zelikow, an ultra-Zionist, and a Bush administration insider. So obviously he was just the man to be executive director. But what happened, Jeff, was that on 9/11, when I saw what had happened, it hit me, this official story is nonsense. Once they started immediately, you got people like Ehud Barak, who was Prime Minister of Israel up to the early months of 2001. He was on the BBC immediately after the attacks, pointing the finger at bin Laden and Afghanistan. And it became very clear that this was what I've termed over the years problem reaction solution, or others call a false flag. And so I started investigating, and I gave it my total attention through 2001, 2002, and produced a book in September 2002 called Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center Disaster. And what happened in about 2018 is I set out to write an update of that book. Well, that lasted about 2 weeks, right? Because very quickly realized that it's another blank sheet of paper I've got to start with here, because of all that's come out. And all that, more than that, the context of 9/11 has become clearer and clearer and clearer as the years have passed, in terms of being, hence the name of the book, the trigger that began a sequence of events that deleted basic freedoms and also justified a series of long-planned regime changes, or attempted regime changes in some cases, in the Middle East. And so I started from scratch. And every minute, virtually, that I haven't had other things to do, like eat and speaking to us. I've been on this case researching it. I've been writing some of it in hotel rooms on speaking tours. In fact, I wrote a chapter about George Soros, actually totally synchronistically, in Budapest, where he was born. So it was a real passion of mine, because the information that started to fit together was just mind blowing. I mean, you find the more you research it, there is literally not one pillar of the official 9/11 story that stands up to scrutiny. And people who have read the book now their jaws are still dropped, especially those who really have not really looked into 9/11. They're absolutely shocked at the scale of lies that they've been told, which can be factually proved. But like you say, the backbone of it, the theme of it is 9/11, but it's much more than 9/11. It's where we are now and where we're going now, and not least the central role in this of a death cult, which controls Israel, which controls Saudi Arabia, which massively impacts upon American politics, etc. That death cult is the key to understanding not just 9/11 and who really did it, but actually world events in general.
We are being dragged, some of us kicking and screaming, but most with a semi-vacant, confused look in their eyes, dragged into the next millennium. I don't care about the calendar. The next millennium of abject, absolute, vicious control. Pre-cradle to grave control, which you've been talking about forever. Everything you have prophesied, forecast, predicted, whatever word you want to use out there, has come to pass and is coming to pass. And it is coming to pass at a speed which boggles even me. I still can't believe how fast they're doing. It's like they know there's no pushback. They've achieved what they wanted to achieve in terms of hegemony of the people, control of the people, abject dominance. They're just letting it fly now. And AI is coming, which you've talked about so articulately, within 10 years. I think it's going to be within 6 or 7 years. AI will be probably, arguably, the most sentient intelligence on the planet. Arguably. I'm not saying I'll argue it, but it'll be arguable.
I think it will be arguable because, as I've pointed out a number of times, people look at Facebook and they look at Google and they look at these internet corporations and near monopolies, and they say, oh, look, they're keeping surveillance on us. But another aspect of this, Jeff, of course, is that all that information that is posted by people is being fed into AI, learning AI. So AI is becoming an absolute state-of-the-art expert in human psychology and human reaction. And if you know that if you do point A, you're going to get reaction B, then it becomes a manipulator's charter once you get AI so up to speed with how human psychology works.
AI, you gave it 10 years. I've been saying 10 years too. I don't think it's going to be 10 years, David. I think it's coming much faster than that. And when they announced about a year and a half ago, that they, forgive me the use of the term, are going to teach AI common sense, I knew it was over. Who's common sense?
Yeah, they're common
AI,
sense.
AI. There you go. Go ahead.
Exactly. And you know, the 10 years is not my time scale. It's people like Ray Kurzweil, the Google executive, who's talking about 2030 as a key year when humanity starts being connected to AI. And, of course, what that means is that instead of manipulating human perception through the control of information, which is what has been done up to this point, you then give people their perceptions direct via the AI connection. And one of the big controversial, and there's so many controversial things in the trigger from the normal perspective, and certainly from the cabal's perspective of silencing dissent. But one of the big controversial things in the book is how control of this smart grid and AI is moving, at such speed into Israel. I talk in the book about the protocols of the Elders of Zion, which I say is a manifestation of this death cult.
It's the playbook, is what it
not
is.
Not a Jewish plot, but the death cult, which manipulates the Jewish community, manipulates Israel. It absolutely manifests as the Saudi royal family and so on. But these protocols of the Elders of Zion are actually this death cult's plot. And one of the things it talks about, of course, is the emergence of the world king, the world leader out of Israel. And, one of the things that it's essential for people to appreciate is that there are two lines of knowledge and there are two timelines going on in the same reality. There's the level of knowledge and technological knowledge and esoteric knowledge that is allowed overwhelmingly into the public arena and is policed mm-hmm. very carefully. And then mm-hmm. there's another line of knowledge and a timeline, which is in the shadows, in the dark occult world of this death cult.
In the blackness of the death cult.
Yeah, and therefore... what we see as the cutting edge of technology at any point is not their cutting edge. So much so that, the stuff that's happening today, this may sound amazing to people, but it is amazing, but it, I would say, is true. That in the times when these protocols were being compiled, this technological possibility was already known. I mean, to them, we see, for instance, these amazing prophecies of people like George Orwell with these telescreens, which we now call smart TVs, and we're only seeing the first versions of them now, not where it's meant to go.
First wave. But
it's not prophecy if you access the agenda. Because if you access the agenda, you can predict the future. Because unless something intervenes to stop that agenda unfolding, it will unfold. Thus, you can predict the future. When I've written things in the past and they've happened again and again, it's not because I've sat in a darkened room pulling it out of the ether. It's because if you can access this agenda, you can predict the future. The idea of people like you and me is to alert enough people to bring about an intervention to stop it happening. So, when I looked at this world king and this basic control of the world out of Israel, it would have seemed fantastic if you only take the public arena version of possibility. How are they going to do that? How is that possible? But as the technology starts to play out in the public arena, you can start to see how that would be possible. If you have a smart grid, hence everything's called smart these days, and part of that grid is connecting AI to the human mind, then you can control humanity and human perception, thus behavior, from a central point. And I say in the book, towards the end, I say that central point is planned to be Israel, which is a major center, but there are others, of this death cult.
I think many of you listening, and I pointed this out over and over again, ran it several times, the video of Elon Musk unveiling his Neuralink. I would urge all of you, if you haven't seen it, do a search for Neuralink, N-E-U-R-A-L-I-N-K, Neuralink, Elon Musk. It's about 16, 17 minutes long. You must watch that. Now, keep in mind while you're watching it, and he's showing you this robotic device that comes down over the human head, peels back the skin, and drills micro holes in the brain and inserts up to 1,000 little filaments, fibers, if you will, which are controlled by a chip that is put under your skin behind your ear and powered by your own body's electrical current, right? When you see this, understand that Elon says it'll be ready next year. They've already got it ready. It's been beta tested long ago. And this is what they want us to know about. What David just said a few minutes ago, the other agenda, where they really are with these things, probably includes concepts like spraying silicon-based nanodevices that we inhale, drink, or eat, and that they go into our bodies. We don't have to have our head drilled and fibers put in it. These things are in our bodies. They're controlled by installations such as a HARP-like antenna farm, which are truckable and can be set up in no time at all. All they need is a place to plug them in. So these self-replicating little silicon-based nanomachines are in our bodies in all likelihood right now and are doing receiving and sending chores around the clock.
Yeah, the nanotechnology. If you don't want someone to know something, then like a magician, you get them to look at the other hand. You get them to look in another direction. And so when people are talking about these rice-sized chips, as if that's the whole cutting edge, of course they exist and they are being put into people, not least in the thousands in places like Sweden. But the real name of the game, as you rightly point out, Jeff, is nanotechnology, which we're breathing in, which can be injected with vaccines,
any, sure.
Yeah, exactly. But Elon Musk needs calling out big time. This man is a monumental fraud. Here is a man who came out and said that AI could be the end of humanity. Brackets true, but then creates that company Neuralink to connect the human brain to a computer system. It's his SpaceX. I say his. He's just a front man. Let's be honest about it. That's putting up satellites, plan to be in their thousands, to fire Wi-Fi, etc., at the Earth, because this smart grid can only function in terms of total human control if, as Kurzweil calls it, the cloud, which he says we're going to start to be connected to by 2030, if that cloud covers every inch of the planet. The only way you're going to do that is from space, and that's what Elon Musk and SpaceX is involved in. Actually, the prime, as I understand it, the prime means of putting these satellites into orbit. And the idea is to create what I've been calling, since way, way back, the technological sub-reality, where the human brain is connected to a technological sub-reality, like a bubble around the planet, and humanity gets its perceptions, like I say, thus behavior, from that cloud. This is what it's all about. And people like Ray Kurzweil will absolutely know that. These people need calling out, because Silicon Valley is the devil's playground. It's the place where this stuff is not coming from. It's coming through. It's coming from other places in terms of its core. And as I look at it in the book in some detail towards the end, the real Silicon Valley, the new Silicon Valley, is now being created in Israel around a place called Beersheba, where the Israeli government military intelligence networks, brackets, same thing, because in effect, Israel is a military intelligence junta that rules everything. They've created this Beersheba complex where enormous numbers of people, military people and others that answer to the military, have created this complex, which is about controlling cyberspace. And what have we had? We've had the major players in Silicon Valley, your Microsofts and Facebook and all the others, Google, moving their research and development to Beersheba. because that's where this thing is supposed to be centered on and controlled from. And they need calling out. And this whole anti-Semitism industry and protection racket, as I call it, is simply there. And the expanded version of anti-Semitism is only there to silence the exposure of these things under the heading of anti-Semitism. So you have a situation where George Soros can fund Marxism in America and around the world, which is what he's doing. He can increasingly fund the establishment of district attorneys all over America increasingly. And there's a common theme when they get in, which is that they allow crime to flourish because they want to create this jungle atmosphere that to keep people in fear of each other.
Chaos.
And yet, if you expose Soros, which is easy to do in documentation that's been leaked, you are an anti-Semite. So this is simply a protection racket to protect the exposure of what we're talking about tonight.
Really well said. And we live in a world of so much artifice, deceit, deception, misdirection, lies, outright blatant in-your-face lies. I forget who said it first. The bigger the lie, the easier for the masses to accept it. But that's
true.
Yeah,
that was the Nazis, wasn't it? Yeah.
Goebbels, huh?
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really a very bright man. Who knew? He figured it out. And let's rewind. Go back to the 20s. Edward L. Bernays, whom nobody knew about until, I don't know, I was one of the first. David knew about him. We stumbled across this man, and nobody knew about Bernays. And pretty soon, everybody was talking about Bernays. Bernays was the first wizard. He was the man behind the curtain. He understood human motivations. He understood mass advertising. He understood how to corrupt independence and make it dependence. He was a brilliant man. So, yes, it's all there. And the book we're talking about is The Trigger, David Icke's new one, and it's a stunner. So the reviews, here's one. Just I'll read one for you for fun. Finally, the truth about Zionism. This is a verified purchaser. I'm still reading this book. It's huge. In my honest opinion, it is the most important book ever written. David Icke has always been spot on. The first part of the book focuses on 9/11, which is the trigger for the ultimate Zionist plan for humanity. This affects everyone within the coming years, with artificial intelligence plugging into the human psyche, therefore controlling all of humanity. This is the truth, people. Do your own homework and due diligence. It's Agenda 2030, and they are very close to it. 9/11 was the catalyst needed to a new American century, a greater Israel, the abolishment of our Bill of Rights, gun confiscation, the targeting of conservatives worldwide, and the abolishment of free speech. Wake up, people. This is very real. I only hope the people wake up in time to stop this Zionist plan for a complete takeover of the world. Read it. Well, there's just one review for you. The Trigger. All right, David, go ahead. Anywhere you want.
Well, like I say, the whole thrust of this anti-Semitism industry is becoming blatantly obvious.
Where it's a con. It's a con.
It's a total con, yeah. We've had this expansion of the definition of anti-Semitism, which includes criticism of Israel. And this is nothing to do with protecting Jewish people from discrimination. It's stopping exposure of what we're talking about tonight. And that's why we need backbone. Because we have a Labour Party, an opposition party in Britain, that is now owned by this death cult that controls Israel as well as Saudi Arabia, etc. Because they've got them to accept this definition of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism alone is a total misnomer, of course. doesn't mean anti-Jewish. It means anti-Arab overwhelmingly, because Semitism is
DNA a language. Is DNA, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
In the Middle East, it's a made up term, so that this death cult has its own term to block criticism, etc. So we now have a situation in the Labour Party which confirms that this is not about protecting Jewish people from discrimination, where Jewish people, some of which were born in Israel, who served in the Israel Defense Forces, stayed on after their period of conscription and worked in areas like taking foreign journalists around, etc. Then the penny dropped eventually, and it shows the level of programming in Israel among the population that it took so long for the penny to drop. But the penny dropped eventually of the treatment of the Palestinians by the Israeli death cult controlled government, and whether Netanyahu stays in or not, the death cult will still be in power, left or right. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And therefore, this guy, one particular guy called Chilson, he then comes to Britain to live, sickened by what he's realized is going on. And he thinks, okay, what's a good vehicle for explaining and exposing what's going on? And he joined the Labour Party, and the Labour Party has expelled him, a Jewish man who had relatives that suffered under the Nazis, served in the Israeli Defense Forces. They've expelled him for anti-Semitism. This is a common theme, where Jewish people that criticize Israel get even more abuse than non-Jewish people, because they don't want they don't want a situation where they can't just dub someone anti-Semitic and when they're Jewish. But of course, bizarrely, they try, but it's more difficult. So Jewish people that criticize Israel get even more stick than non-Jewish people, because it's a protection racket for this death cult, which can be taken back centuries and manifested not only as the inner core controller of Israel and the creators of Zionism, which is political philosophy, but also manifested as the Saudi royal family. And that's, you know, when you look at 9/11, you see very clearly in the trigger alone the Israel death cult involvement, central involvement. But of course, you also have the involvement of Saudi Arabia, because they are basically two faces on the same cult. And as I explain in the book, this extreme of Islam, Wahhabism, comes from a guy called Wahhab, who was connected by the British Empire to the Saudi royal family. His daughter married into the House of Saud, and they created this extreme hand chopping version of Islam called Wahhabism, which is practiced where? In Saudi Arabia, where this death cult, these death cult representatives called the House of Saud, of course, control events. And they've also funded with the Americans and the British and created ISIS and the Islamic State, whatever they call themselves today, who practice the same hand chopping philosophy. And this is another point, you know, these extremist Islamic groups, invariably, their main targets for control and violence and murder are other Muslims. Because if you read documents that have been produced for the Israeli government, like one called Clean Break in 1996, which was a study, a report headed by Pearl, you know, Richard Pearl, the infamous neocon at the time of 9/11 in the Pentagon, they are calling in 1996 for maximum conflict between Arab countries. They want the Arab countries to fight each other. It's going on now with what's going on in the Middle East.
Shia Sunni.
Exactly. It's divided rule for the benefit of Israel. Really, the benefit of this death cult, which wants to expand Israel into the greater Israel project that it's been pursuing for so long. So once you realize that this death cult created Zionism, created Israel, because some of the major players in this cult globally are the House of Rothschild, which starts to make sense about them. This death cult engages in sexual abuse of children and incest and all these things, which, you know, as I've been putting in my books for years, this network of control is absolutely obsessed with and awash with. And it starts to make sense. It starts to make sense that this death cult was behind the creation of Christian Zionism, of course, which is the a massive supporter of the Israeli agenda. It all starts to make sense once you realize that this core death cult has infiltrated all these different areas.
Infiltrated, created. I feel particularly sorry for Christian Zionists. I think there are 45 million of them in the U.S., something like that. They'll never have a clue. Never. They'll never figure it out. It's all being manipulated. And as David said earlier, this goes back centuries. It may go back much further than that. We don't know. But believe it, these people knew what was coming. They knew what was ahead. They knew where the technology was going to lead. This has all been planned out. Even people who identify with Judaism and call themselves Jewish, on the face of the planet, 0.3%? That's it? Now, a lot of Jews want nothing to do with this. And we've made that clear over and over and over again. This death cult knows really no boundaries. It appeals to a part of the human psyche that I'd like to think isn't there, but it, unfortunately, sure as hell is. And it's not going away. So we've got issues here, big issues. And the dumber we become, and believe it, the millennials, well, Gen X, the millennials, Gen Z is coming up next, as in the last letter in the alphabet. Things, as David knows better than probably anybody on the planet, within the next 5 to 10 years are going to be so astonishingly different than people can imagine now. The changes that are underway are occurring at what is tantamount to the speed of light in terms of physics. It's that fast.
Yeah, because once you centralize power and centralize power and centralize power, at every point you centralize power, you have more power centrally to centralize power even quicker. So it gets faster and faster and faster.
Geometrically, huge.
Yeah, but, you know, I say about, you know, three or four times in the book at different points, no one needs to read the trigger more urgently than the Jewish community so that they can see how they've been shafted.
Of course.
Because not only is this death cult not a supporter of mainstream Judaism, it's actually an inversion of it. You can go back to the 17th century and a guy called Sabbatai Zevi, who claimed to be the Jewish Messiah. And a cult that was created called Sabbateanism, which was an inversion of everything in mainstream Judaism. So if it was a fast day in Judaism, it would be a feast day in Sabbateanism, which is not too bad on that basis. But once you take the inversion even further, then you start seeing that something that has sex with children as a taboo in Sabbateanism becomes not only not a taboo, but something to be encouraged and something that people are urged to do. And then you had eventually Sabbatai Zevi told by the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, you either convert to Islam or you won't be around very long. So he converts. Lots of his followers convert. And at one point, according to Jewish sources, he had about 1 million followers, this guy. This is in the 17th century. But of course, he and they converted, but only on the surface. So they were outwardly practicing Islam, but they were continuing with Sabbateanism. And it created a group of people known as the Donma or Donme. To turn, that means. And you follow that Donme down, those people outwardly practicing Islam, but privately practicing Sabbateanism, which is just another word for Satanism. And you manifest eventually as the Saudi royal family. they're Sabbateans. And then you had Jacob Frank come in the 18th century, who claimed to be the reincarnation of Sabbatai Zevi and also of the biblical patriarch Jacob. And he took Sabbateanism into even greater depths of depravity, where doing evil was to be encouraged. What did they call it? Redemption through sin. The idea of this cult is the more evil you do, the quicker God will come and sort the world out. They don't believe it. It's just for their followers. And then you can make the connection between Jacob Frank and Mayor Amstel Rothschild, and then to Weishaupt, Adam Weishaupt. Adam Weishaupt was what? He was a Jewish-born man who basically practiced Roman Catholicism. This is classic Sabbatean Frankism, because their modus operandi is infiltration, appearing to be one of the community or the religion they've infiltrated, getting control of that community or religion, while being Sabbatean Frankist Satanists in private, in the shadows. And that's what they've done to the Jewish community. That's what they've done to Islam. And from Weishaupt and Jacob Frank and Mayor Amstel Rothschild came the Illuminati in 1776. And it's interesting that the big key book of Sabbatean Frankism, or one of them, is the Kabbalah, the kind of mystical books of the Jewish belief system, and particularly one called the Zohar. And the word Zohar means radiance or illumination, and so you can see the Illuminati connection to that, and you know, Lucifer the light bringer, and all these things. You can see how all these connect in, and how all the symbolic of the same thing. And this Illuminati, which is an expression of the death cult, then expands itself across the world, and we get where we are now. There's a chapter in the book called Atlantic Crossing, where I chart the movement of this cult into America. And, of course, this massive, unbelievable network of ultra-Zionist groups in America, most famously AIPAC, but there are endless others, have taken over American politics, not least through funding.
Oh, and if you don't believe it, watch how our leading, so-called leading politicians go to the AIPAC meeting every year and essentially just grovel. It's pathetic to watch. Let me say one other thing that echoes what David said earlier. This death cult has no problem sacrificing Jewish people any time it serves their purpose. Just to give you an idea that they're way above any orthodoxy or any religious paradigm. It's all crap to them. This is a death cult, a black death cult. And I want to repeat what I've said for many, many years. Look at the book by Rabbi Michael Dov Wiesmandl, W-E-I-S-M-A-N-D-L, Wiesmandl. It's called 10 Questions to the Zionists. It might as well have been 10 Questions to the Death Cult, because Wiesmandl negotiated a deal with the German government about 1942 to get all Jewish people out of occupied Europe into Spain. And he went to Swiss headquarters where Zionism was located, talked to the head Zionists or death cultists, and said, I only need 3.5 million U.S. to get all of our people out of occupied Europe. The Germans have agreed. They just want them out of Europe. They wanted to go to Spain, but they have to promise they will not go to Palestine. They can go anywhere else, and we need 3.5 million. Well, the top death cultists, or Zionists, however you will, told Rabbi Wiesmandl, who was a very big man in Germany, go home, Rabbi. We're not giving you a dime. Unless a lot of Jews suffer and die during the war, we won't be able to establish Israel after the war as easily as we expect to be able to do. So, sorry, Rabbi, go home. That's the truth. He wrote about in his book, 10 Questions to the Zionists, published in 1948. Look it up. It's all there.
Yeah, this is a very, very important point. And the key reason I say that the Jewish community needs to read this book, The Trigger, more than anyone, really, because of the level of manipulation that they are subjected to and have been for so long. And what you get, for instance, one of the things that is thrown at me by this protection racket is that I've said in a book back in the 1990s, and The Truth Shall Set You Free, that there was a big Jewish involvement in the Russian Revolution. Well, it was a death cult involvement. And that is...
Oh, yeah. They created Bolshevism. They created communism. Yeah. And they went in and they took the damn country over. You bet.
Yeah, that is provable fact. And I quote in Trigger, a guy called Robert Wilton, a British journalist. And in the 1920s, not long after it happened, he wrote a book called The Last Days of the Romanovs, in which he went back to original documents of the revolution cult, if you like. And he found that 458 of the 556 most important positions were held by Jewish people. So what at that point, people say you're an anti-Semite. The question that's not asked is this. Why did a Russian revolution so dominated by apparently Jewish people then start targeting Jewish people in Russia and what became the Soviet Union? Because the death cult hates Jewish people, just as it hates Roman Catholics and all these other groups that it's infiltrated. It hates them. So the Jewish community in general is a vehicle for this cult, a cover for this cult, overwhelmingly unknowingly. And this is why, as you mentioned there, Jeff, you can see instance after instance where apparently Jewish people, I say, pseudo-Jewish people from the death cult, have treated the Jewish masses in horrific ways. It's because they are not really Jewish, but posing as them allows them to control the Jewish community because they believe that they are really Jewish and real protectors. And
what better cover than to pretend to be a persecuted minority and scream about it nonstop? Come on.
Yeah, that's the whole point. And I mentioned it in the book about the 0.3% of the population of the world that is Jewish. And depending on how you define a Jewish person, there are different definitions. A mean figure between the definitions is about 16 million Jewish people in a world of 7.7 billion. And the people that I'm identifying as in full knowledge, not the foot soldiers who are playing the game of the death cult agenda in ignorance of the death cult. I'm talking about the people in full knowledge who are the death cult. Is a tiny, tiny part of that 0.2%, which shows you just how focused this cult is. But of course, they've sold a lie, so many lies, to the Jewish community, just as the royal family of so-called royal family of Saudi Arabia sold lies to the Islamic community. And of course, Saudi Arabia was created by the British Empire and the death cult, not least because it then hijacked the centers of sacred places, Mecca and Medina, of the Islamic religion. It just took it over. But the point is that these people in full knowledge of what they're doing are very, very few. And that's why I say in the book, the people I call ultra-Zionists, anything's good for Israel, no matter what it does and how these affect on other people. Some of them will be members of this death cult in full knowledge, and others will just have so bought the chosen people Israel first belief system that they push this ultra-Zionist agenda without being aware of what's actually driving it. Yeah. And as I say in the book, the death cult will have contempt for those ultra-Zionists doing it in ignorance, probably more than anyone else, as they have contempt for all the people they manipulate.
Yes, yes. It's all right there if people can just take the time and invest the mental energy to connect the dots. David has done that for you in his magnificent library of books, and now the new one, The Trigger. I just want to mention also that the death cult, I want all of you to understand this, and most of you already do, foresaw the technology and created the internet and all primary parts thereof to thoroughly enslave physically, psychologically, and mentally the human race through the internet. They own the money. Remember what Meyer Amschel said, Rothschild. I don't care about elections, just give me the right to control the money. I just got another credit card thing in the mail today. You know what the interest rate is? It'll vary from 16% to 25.5%, David. 25% interest. And they're waving these cards around at people. This is the death cult. These are the physical manifestations of it. Financial opportunities, horror. Internet. It's all controlled by the same basic mentality. And look how they've done it. And now Google search, right? The biggest search engine in the world. They're carefully 24 hours a day, and David was probably the first to talk about this, making things go away from the database, the search engine database, that they don't approve of. So the knowledge base is actually shrinking 24 hours a day. The information base that we used to think will always be there and give us the greatest advantage in terms of understanding what's happening to us, it's being shredded and shrunken right before our very eyes.
Yeah, this is the whole point of what's going on, is that this death cult is driving the world in a particular direction towards a global control system that would make Orwell even wince.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, through Silicon Valley, which it owns, and through the mainstream media, which it overwhelmingly owns, it is suppressing the exposure of what it's doing. So it's controlling what it's doing, and it's suppressing exposure of what it's doing. To put the massive information that people receive onto the internet, which you rightly say they controlled, and not only control, they created, is because you can then algorithmically dictate what people see and hear. There's not even any discussion has to go on, any debate. It's just AI will delete what it's programmed to delete. And this is why we've had this hysteria of censorship, because as you get closer and closer to the end game, there's obviously more and more in your face confirmation of it. And thus, when people explain why this is happening, people become more open to it, because it's not some esoteric concept anymore. It's in your face. So as that happens, they have to increase the censorship to stop what is happening being explained in terms of what it's really for, as opposed to what we're being told it's for. And, you know, the young are being attacked more than anyone else perceptually through the schools, through the colleges, to turn out generations of adults for the time when this is meant to come in full blown, who will be perceptual babes in arms to what they want to introduce. This is why the whole targeting is the young. They're waiting for people like you and me to leave. And when we do, and I ain't leaving for a long time, I'll tell you that. But when we do, what they plan is left behind are people that have been programmed from birth with a certain perception of a reality and an addiction to technology. I mean, our generations, Jeff, are the last generations that have the radar. I was born in 1952, so I grew up for a long time. In a society that wasn't dominated by technology, where there was still the ability to express yourself freely. And so we have a radar that can compare what is happening with what we knew before. When you're born into this world now, how it is appears to be this is how things are because it's all you've ever known. And so our generations really do have a big responsibility to take this on. And anyone who isn't, any parent that gets some idea of what's happening and sits on their hands and zips their mouth ought to look their kids and grandkids in the eye and tell them that there's nothing that they should do to alert as many people as possible to this, because their children and grandchildren are going to live in a nightmare world, a dystopian world of enormous extreme, unless this is headed on.
Well, you couldn't have said it any better. And I've always felt that those who remember like we do have an overwhelming obligation to share that information with any younger people who want to know. They can't experience it physically or intuitively or mentally. They can't. It doesn't exist anymore. We have to help them understand what once was, what it was like to be a proactive mind, a proactive individual, not a reactive, drooling, Pavlovian idiot. And that's unfortunately what many people have been turned into. David, thank you, my friend. Best of luck, I don't need to say it, on the trigger. This is an awesome book you've created, and congratulations once again.
Thanks, Jeff. Much appreciated.
All right. Take care. Get some rest.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. David Icke, live from the UK, where I think it's about 5 a.m. over there now, something like that. All right, the trigger, the lie that changed the world. Who really did it and why? David Icke. All right, back with you tomorrow. Take care.